I think about death all the time, guys.
There is this concept of living funerals. Is this the dying's responsibility?
And I really want to be able to help you process death.
But grief looks different for everybody also, right? Living funerals. Die, must try.
This is your daily catch-up.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, so today's conversation is actually inspired by the late Michelle Ng, who held a living funeral for herself. Ooh. Yeah, you might have seen this in the news. Yeah. Not to be confused with someone knocking on the casket during the funeral. So what happened is that this lady, Michelle, who actually passed on in January, in December, she actually held a living funeral where she invited like friends and, she invited whoever she wanted to invite to go and then it... I mean, it was as though a regular funeral was taking place, but she got to be there and hear like
the
what
eulogy.
people said about her, and then I see that gathering of people, right, to commemorate her in a sense.
Yeah,
and
that's
then, nice.
So it was quite interesting because there is this concept of living funerals that like people in the US also do.
Ah. It's a trend now, or has it been like around for a while?
I think recently with the topic of death becoming less of a taboo topic, then people are more comfortable with this and people are realizing that I don't want the funeral to just be like, I don't know what happens because I'm dead.
Yeah.
Right? Like I want to be there to like have a last, in a sense, meeting with everybody that I feel like mattered to me in my life.
Yeah.
Do you think people will still attend the actual funeral?
I mean, she didn't go already.
Maybe she would have. I don't know what she had.
Yeah, no, but because this may be in the West, but then in like Asia, right, there's still like customs that need to be done. Need to do the wake, then need to do all the... So then no one is going to end up...
How does she know when she's going to pass?
No, because she got diagnosed with a rare form of cancer in 2021, and then it kind of spread everywhere in her body by 2023. So it was towards the end of her life already, and then she thought like, okay, let me just hold this before I pass.
Okay, I think it's so beautiful because much of the funeral industry is to make the living feel good.
Mm.
And even those bad kids, when they cry at their parents' funeral and they regret this and they regret that and all that stuff, right? It's like, but your parents was alive like last week, but you didn't do much, you know?
Mm.
Oh.
Yeah, like you know when you attend funerals and then you see those like, right? So I thought, this is really nice. Like, I would want.
Really?
It's whether... not appealing to you at all, meh?
As in...
I think super appealing, yeah.
I think to me, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter when I die, But when I'm still alive.
Sorry, let me clarify something. So Michelle was diagnosed with a rare form of ovarian cancer in 2021 and the cancer spread to a lot of parts of her body by 2023. And that was when she moved into a hospice. So it was actually, if I'm not wrong, a medical social worker that was at the hospice that suggested to her, hey, do you want to like try hosting this for your loved ones?
Mm.
And another common term for this is also a celebration of life.
Mm, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
So then, but she said she specifically wanted to call it a living funeral because she didn't want death to be something to be feared. And so she wanted to have something like a birthday party.
Yeah. Right?
So an intimate atmosphere with good music, food and words of love. Yeah. So how would y'all imagine, like if you were to host a living funeral for yourself, how would you do it?
I used to think about my funeral in like my first iteration of, I think about death all the time, I guess. So like I always think like the first iteration of that funeral is how many people will come and miss me, right? That was like my early iterations of when I die.
Mm.
And then after it evolved to, I think it was hip and cool at that time lah, that like when I die, I want to be a party. No, have lah, there was a trend.
Must open champagne.
Ah, must have like tequila shots lah. Then don't play the sad morning music. Let's make it a party.
The girls must come with the champagne.
Yeah, not so much. Then after that, I slowly realized that there is a very big burden on my family or the people that's planning the funeral. Because they can't just call a guy to do a standard funeral. Eh. They now need to like...
But can you make party?
Party, then like deal with drunk people.
Then McDonald's hang up on you.
Then like police come and catch. I don't know. Like, or like they cannot sit down there and mourn properly. If they want to mourn, they need to step happy. Because in my last will, I'm like, make it fun, you know? Then it's like super stressed. And then I come across a living funeral and I think it's very nice in a sense whereby you can have that party and everything. Yeah. And then you get to hear yourself
in third person.
No, you get to hear your eulogy. You get to hear a eulogy. Yeah. And then after that, now that the people that I'm closest to were there at my living funeral when I actually died, then what's the fastest way to ASAP dispose?
And I think that's interesting because something that people always talk about is how they want to be remembered when they die. And in that sense, you can pretty much find out.
Yeah, I actually would do it right, almost straight up as close as possible to an actual funeral. I want to lie down in the middle.
That's what I'm thinking. Also, did she lie down in the?
No lah.
No, she didn't.
It was just a party at her living room.
In the hospice, if I'm not wrong.
No, but you turn the bed around. So like, instead of me like facing upwards right that way, you turn the way around and then incline. So
it's like gate crash. There, you got a phone in the coffee. And someone is streaming.
No, but on the flip side, right, I always also think about like when I think about how close I am to a person, I always think, oh, would they show up for my funeral, right? And the worst part is that if no one will show up to your funeral, this time if leaving funeral, you knew that you know who didn't turn up.
No, whatever you're gonna do.
Well, how do you say no?
It's so hard to show up.
Cannot say
even
no.
Even if we're not close,
I will still be there.
I will show up.
Can you imagine how you send out the invite for that?
Save the date. Save the date.
Like
no, they're awkward.
He
like
to create a joke and pretend it's not a joke.
Yeah,
that's
right. He's a contributor.
No, I feel like the something nice about it is also that you bring everybody together and they will be able to support each other after you're gone also. Like they will now know that, oh shit, you have this friend, you have this group of people and all that. Or like your friends might be there to offer support to your family, your parents or whatever. Yeah.
And that the funerals, now for example, you attend a lot of funerals, it's very silo. You go there, you say hi to the family, then you go and pay your respects. Then you kind of stay with the people that you came with.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now it's like everyone's connected.
It's just awkward if like everybody go there and then they have to say out how they feel in front of everybody else.
I think what is interesting is that my friend actually mentioned this at her 21st birthday party. Cause that's like you pretty much invite all your groups of friends and then together, right? And then she said that like her happiest moment from that day was actually when everyone just seated together having dinner, right? And then she see like all like different parts of her life like mesh together and then she's like, like this is my life.
Yeah.
And then she was super happy.
If you have to attend a living funeral, right? What kind of feelings do you have to carry with, you know, to the funeral,
True. You say tomorrow, then I say like, guys, actually I'm dying.
What do you bring? Do you bring presents?
What are end of life presents?
Your present. Because at the end of the day, right? No.
I bring some diapers.
So here's the thing, right? Like at the end of the day, when people are in funerals, like there's always so many things that have been left said, unsaid, right? So many things left unsaid. And
you botched that.
Yeah. It's so easy, right? Yeah, but so left unsaid and like, I think there's a lot of regret, there's a lot of guilt and people that often want to speak or end up crying, right? The reason for that is because of all this like pent up stuff. And usually with funerals, you haven't seen this person for a while or so. So I feel like with these living funerals, I think the whole approach is to finally say what you have to say, lor. Like if there's any like secrets that you've kept from like a parent or an uncle or whatever, or like certain things that you've always wanted to show gratitude for, like this is the time.
Maybe just the second part though. I feel if you, let's say Pat cheated on me with you, for example, let's say, right? And then I die already, I'm reaching end of life and you are one of the few that I feel like, you know, I want you to be there at my funeral. And you decide to come one week before and you say, by the way, John, I just want you to know I I will murder you, you will cut short my. Maybe I might die on that day.
You then you can hold the real funeral. Like you may one spot. Don't need pay double rental. No, like I think right. Okay. I'm not saying reveal all secrets. I'm saying that if it's the opportunity that if you do want to say something, like now's the chance to say because sometimes you don't get that chance. By the time you want to, the person already died. Yeah. So like, it could be, you know, oh, do you know when I was 5 years old, I actually broke your favorite vase. I'm so sorry. Yeah. Like, it's just one of those random things that you all can laugh about.
Just receiving all the bad news.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that you tell me.
Or like, you are adopted. Then you're like, so who's my real parents? Then like, I don't know. But you're going to die tomorrow. Like, you know.
Maybe you I'll set some context. Okay. So when I moved to Singapore, my parents didn't move with me. But I was, my legal guardian was my maternal uncle, right? And so he essentially raised me from the ages of like 14 to like...
Where is it? Your mother's brother?
My mother's brother. And so when he unfortunately got diagnosed with something that like they just couldn't like fix lah. Mm. And he had about like, I think 3 months to live. The good news was that having those 3 months felt like extra time for him because he had a health scare and he could have died then. Mm. Then in the hospital, the 3 months he was there, everything was like extra time. So... because we all took turns to like come and visit and take time out to like visit him, right? The one-on-one time I had with him was like time that I never ever had with him. Mm. Because even at home, it was always like, hey, how's work? How's all these things? We almost felt like catch-up friends. But having that one-on-one time, it suddenly felt normal to like broach certain topics that we don't normally talk about. It could have just been like about family and like what aspirations we have for like some of our younger cousins.
That actually reminds me of like what the Mr. Ng Kok Song said, that like he took leave from work because his wife was going to die, right? And then the time that was spent with her, it was almost like mourning her or almost a celebration of their time together, that like when she died, he wasn't as sad.
Yeah.
So I think like that's so interesting because it's almost like maybe a lot of what happens at funerals is that a lot of people suddenly realize, oh shit, they have so much regret like we talked about, right? And then they're like, oh, all these things are unsaid. But then now bringing that chunk forward and letting it spread out over maybe a period of a few days, right?
Yeah.
Then you can resolve it with them and like there's something more cathartic about that.
Yeah, it was very strange because I actually, like I take death very, very hard. Like, so because like, I think my grandparents all passed away before I was like 12 or like 14 or whatever. Right? And all those deaths really, really hit me. And then when my best friend passed away also when I was 18, I mourned for like a year, but when he came to my uncle, I was actually very at peace when he passed. And it was because we had these like 3 months of just conversations and talking so much about everything that I really felt there was nothing left that I needed to say or for him. I hope lah, the other way around as well.
But by that, right, do you then come to the realization that when we mourn the loss of someone, that the key things is the conversations that we never had?
I mean, I don't think it's just the conversations.
But yeah, is there a big thing you think?
I think it's not realizing that this person would just be gone. Like that sense of loss.
Yeah.
And so being able to process that preemptively.
Yeah. I think it was very intentional that we were processing his death together. Mm. Because another topic that we talked about was because a lot of our family members that when we visited him, right, they would always talk about when he will get better. They will always say, but don't worry, like, okay, so now when you move back home, right, we will get a helper, we will get a live-in nurse. They kept talking about plans of when he will get better, but when the doctor would talk to us, it didn't sound like he was going to get better. So when I had one-on-one time with him, I still debate myself whether it was the right move or not, right? But when they were all away, I talked to him about, look, there's a chance that this is really it lah. And I really want to be able to help you process death together. And I think I was the only one that he really talked about when it came to him coming to terms with death because everyone else couldn't come to terms with it. And so he couldn't even process it himself.
You know, there are homes that do palliative care, right? Which is end of life care.
Yeah.
And I always thought that if I fall sick, like the doctor deemed that I left, like at the moment I have a date lah, and the date is like less than a year. I always feel like, of course I go there. Then I got 24-hour help and support. Then I don't shit on the bed that my family will have to clean and all that stuff, right? But then I realized, especially my parents and all that stuff, they still ask me questions like, when I owe you, will you send me to old folks home? And that's like terrible for them, you know? But for me, it sounds
like a blessing.
Like normal, eh? It sounds like, I would say it's like a great time.
Because they grew up in a time, right, where when you want to go to the airport, right, somebody need to send you. And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
But now like life is so optimized in a way. Everything is so, sending a friend or a family member to the airport is inconvenient because after that I need to drive back.
Yeah, it's very inefficient.
What if, right, you know, doctor like tell me I got 3 months to leave. Then after that, I invite everyone come for the party already, right? Then I survive.
Yeah, that's what Alistair and I were talking about. What if you hold a living funeral, right? But then actually, miracle happened, you never die.
Then you monetize your following.
Ooh. So maybe the trick here, right, is not to go and wait until you're about to die and do a living funeral. Because you also don't know, like maybe you just get hit by a car, you don't have that 3 months to live, ma. Like the idea is instead of waiting for someone to go and host a birthday party for you every year, you take control and you host your own yearly party where everyone gets to celebrate.
Where it's a semi-funeral.
Honestly, honestly, that's what my grandmother is doing.
Oh.
Like the 80th, 70th birthday is a big thing. Yeah. Like it's a dancing, tables everywhere. Then everybody's invited and just have fun, big cake and all this kind of nonsense. Got like entertainment, all that. Yeah. Then as she got older, I think now we do like from 60, to 70, 80, then 85.
Oh, so like closer.
Oh, intervals are shorter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 91, 92, 93, 94.
maybe. But it's like, it's just celebrate, lor. Just have fun. Lor. She's also like very like, I feel like something that I've learned about death like recently is, or come to the realization of, right, is that the reason why you are sad or you're so sad and you cannot get over death and all that, right, is a lot to do with attachment, which is very different from I think if you create attachment to something, I think it's very unhealthy because you keep thinking of the what ifs, the possibilities, rather than just appreciating the time that you have had with this person And to me, that it's a very fine line. If you can separate the two, I think you'll be able to accept the death more gracefully.
Yeah, no, which is why where I wanted to go with this palliative care thing.
Right.
I feel like if honestly in your heart you don't mind, right, talk to your family about this early, right? It's probably what I did. I mean, I've already, right? Then I think it's a lot better because I think where it's difficult on both sides, right, is the family suddenly have to imagine life without you. Meaning I go home, I'm not going to see you anymore. Like at breakfast, we're not gonna have dinner together. And you remove yourself from that routine first while you're still alive.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, you don't make your last year of memory with your family members, you shitting the bed.
Yeah. It's a trial period of you away.
Yeah. You know, you outsource that part. And when your family members that do want to see you, they come and they will make the trip to see you or they will video call you. And then you start coming to terms with the fact that you are ready to die. You know, as opposed to being exposed to new obstacles on the family, like you see suddenly your grandchild fail tuition, like you fail Chinese, then you worry about them, or you know, your grandchild broke out his girlfriend, then you worry about them. You don't take on any more of that. You wait for people to come and visit you. And then when your time is up, right, you feel like you can let go also. You know, I feel like.
Yeah, so it's win-win.
But palliative care is expensive.
No, but I feel like, right, like at first when you go in, that is the vibe. Like, oh, I am not a burden. I am here. I live my best life here, right? I don't trouble anybody. The people that I trouble, I pay to trouble. And then
loneliness
over the period of time, like say you are there for 1 year, then you see your family come like every week, then space out to every month, then space out to like
once a year.
Yeah. Once every 2 months they come. Then I think that's when the loneliness just creeps in. You know?
But I think it's by design.
But the difference, right, is that our relatives, right, the old now, right, they don't have very like solitary hobbies that you can do in a room.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
But when we get old, right, the gaming devices by then, right, will be so small that we will be like, go
our
home lah.
Our necks will be so thick.
Yeah. We'll be like playing VR games. We'll be like, sure, no problem lah. See you on Discord, whatever.
You can live another 10 lifetimes before.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. And I'm hopeful that it becomes a thing such that it's not you there, it's you and your best pals there.
Yeah.
There's something quite interesting, like a Reddit thread about this person saying, what if you cannot talk about death? Like you just simply cannot broach this topic with, say, your parents. So what this lady and her mom actually did, this is a different lady as the original lady that I mentioned just now. So what this user and her mom did was they wrote sealed letters. So inside these letters, it contains any wishes, like dying wishes, then details of your bank account, pension, life insurance, everything, and then like who to get what money. Like essentially a small mini will. Right. And then like what will happen to your like prized possessions, that kind. I mean my favorite soft toy or what I want to give to who. So then like these letters are given to each other, then will open when like the other person is dying.
Yeah. My mom did that right before surgery. And she did a knee surgery, but because she had complications, I mean, she had existing issues,
need
right?
Need to GA, is it?
Yeah, so GA may not wake up. Mm. Yeah. So she actually wrote a letter for each one of us, and then she tell us where it is, but like we cannot open.
Then you never open.
So until now, never open.
I never open. No, like, she didn't, no, when she come back, she's back. Like, y'all got open, y'all never open. Then she like, make sure she disposed. Like, I think she also paisei or whatnot. Yeah, but I think on the I told her I open, I should open. You go inside, open it.
And then you open, it's just a you.
My relationship with funerals has always been like, why do we care so much about funerals? Because funerals at the end of the day, right, is for the living. I won't be there. I don't care what you do. I really don't care what you do with my dead body or whatever. But
remains.
Sure. Whatever, you burn it or whatever, throw away. I don't really care, man, because I'm dead already. But then I think John Paul mentioned about how the living funeral, right, it can be for your loved ones, right, to create a support system for themselves. Then again, I am thinking about, is this the dying's responsibility to help our loved ones, right, find peace?
Yes.
I don't think it's a responsibility. I think it's just like you love the person and you want them to be taken care of, lor.
It's a nice thing to do, lah.
It's an instinct.
Yeah, so there's this Reddit thread, right? Uh-huh. This guy, he talked about how his wife and his family, right, they all want him to hold a living funeral.
Am I the asshole for not wanting to participate in a living funeral for myself?
Plot twist.
Yeah, like he doesn't want...
don't force, lah.
Is that to the dead,
or the dying?
But then he said it's the dying's responsibility to make everybody feel...
I don't think it's the dying's responsibility, but I do think that post-death, right, like for the individuals that have to deal with grief, like I came across this quote, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard it before, but like, grief is love with nowhere to go, with no place to go. You hear it before?
Yeah.
And I found it quite
profound,
interesting, because I think the way it manifests itself is that when you are connected to all these other people who are also dealing with the same thing, and sometimes they may reach out to you or you reach out to them, then you start to realize that the love for that shared person is now being passed on or redirected to these other people. Yeah. And I feel like that is a good place to channel that. Yeah. For this situation.
I feel like maybe it's because I've never been to a funeral that I can't even picture how I want my own funeral. Like, I just don't care.
Just go and see, lah. Bishan got a lot, yeah. The older neighbor.
Yeah, it's true.
No, as in to me, it's like, I die already, lah. Then whatever y'all want, do y'all do. Oh.
No, but I feel like there's an experience also, like Pat's grandma, for example, right, took it a step further by planning her own funeral. Years before she died, she started paying the installment. Years before she
like
died.
She chopped the place, that kind.
No, you chop.
Not just that, but like for the actual funeral ceremony, like it's all paid for.
So she chose the menu. She chose like there'll be a TV.
As in, there's a specific service for this.
Yes.
Okay.
And in fact, the family tried to cancel it. They thought it was a scam because she doesn't know how to do e-payments, ma. So there was a guy in a suit, like a Mormon,
trying to collect money.
Knock on the door and collect cash. Then the maid go and report to her children. This uncle always come and take money from her mother and all that stuff, right? Then the mother don't care, and the mother kept paying. Then when one day the person died, then the uncle just decided to call this number and just. In his head, it's a scam already.
Yeah.
But he just called and see what happened.
And we are ready to go.
And then the person show up with specific instructions. And then when he says, so how much? He said, your mother pay already. She planned to pay across 5 years or 3 years, whatever, right? But she passed on earlier. So actually the balance is like 2K. Yeah, that kind of thing. So you don't need to make that, especially for cash-strapped families, right? You think about, there's a lot of, and I've personally been through it where you look at aunties and uncles, right? That honestly, you see them, they never visit at all. Nah. But when it comes down to it, right? They were like, why you all pick this coffin? This coffin so cheap. Upgrade the coffin. This and that, you know, but they're not paying. But saying that helps them feel like better children. You know, there's a very warped generation that is just like that. Lor. They just use mouth, it makes them feel better, you know?
Yeah, understand.
And so there's a lot of that going on, and the people that's paying for it or responsible for it, which is usually my family, which is why I've been to so many funerals, right? That they undertake the responsibility of that, and let's not waste too much money, let's not overcommit the money, because the paiting come in already, we'll cover costs and distribute to the children. And there's just really no point. We are buying this thing, we're going to burn it in 3 days, like literally burn it in 3 days. Yeah, and so like Pat's grandma, for example, settled her coffin already, and there's a TV there for a slideshow, which is something that you need to decide whether you want to pay this premium or not for a TV and a slideshow.
You can also set your own picture. Because a lot of times the picture, you don't get
instructions. There's instructions. Tell all my grandchildren to send over pictures of me. So we got homework. So Pat, for example, will have to scroll. And take send selfies together. Ayo. And so when we show up there, right?
It's already
the table like wedding, eh? Because
got PowerPoint,
because usually it's just a wooden table, yeah, then on the white plastic, right?
Yeah.
This one is red and like white cloth or red and gold cloth.
Right.
Then got flower. Oh. Then got TV slideshow. Then you just realize that that was how the, her grandmother wanted to go.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And it was so beautiful.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you though? Would you pay for your funeral before it happens?
Like, I hope to.
Set aside money. The mini.
I think I will. Just so. Just so you ease the burden for a loved one.
15-20k though.
Yeah.
But okay, let's look at the trade-off though.
Okay, let's go. Hypotheticals.
I feel like what helps, and because once again, I've seen so much death, right?
Mm.
So much.
What helps us quick process it or keep our shit together
mm.
is the fact that when the family member goes on, we got shit to do.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you pre-plan everything, right? Then their job is to just wait. And feel the anxiety of someone has taken the body away. There's no decision to be made. There's nothing I can do. Because I feel like the act of having to do something
busy.
For them and then making decisions and like choose the makeup for that person and be like, yeah, I want a person to wear a blue suit. Yeah. I feel like that's cathartic in its own way. Mm. It gives you a final remembrance, a final act of service.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know taking that away is selfish or not.
Yeah, but you can always create other like illusions of choices.
But the executor of said will and all that stuff comes in later. Ma.
Yeah, but it's also a very tiring job because I think there's quite a lot of people right, who get so invested in having to do all that that they grieve later on.
Yeah.
They don't feel it and then it hits them later.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, and
is
then
that a terrible thing though?
I think so, eh, because like, I think you want to feel very much in the moment and present when like, you know, before they close the coffin, so you can see one last time and then have all the emotions poured out. And then once it's closed already and then like in the incinerary already, and then you're like, oh shit, now it's hitting and like it's too late almost.
But too late to what? I mean, you know what I mean?
Like too late for you to process that while seeing the, I mean, what I'm saying is that there are just different moments in which you want to be very present for. And sometimes when your head's not in it because, oh yeah, now I need to worry about the catering. Now I need to worry about this and that. Like I feel like you distress your family from that so that they can really be in the moment. Then I think they heal earlier. So.
But most of the time for these processes also, there will be that one person that chooses that needs that. But then there will be the others that don't. So like most of the time it's just assigned or allocated.
Yeah, fair.
Because I feel like there were instances also, especially when I look at my parents where they were running around and doing all the thing, right? Only when the funeral over or like at the incinerator, then they really sit down there and truly grieve because their work is done. You know, but in that grief, they also, I feel like they also feel like they did a final act of service for you.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And yeah, but grief looks different for everybody also, right? Like the duration, the process itself also.
Yeah.
I think one of the hardest things is when you go back, then you need to clean up.
The person leaving with the person, right? Yeah.
They're not there anymore.
That one is shack.
Yeah. For a lot of my family tree, right? During their palliative years, right? Or palliative months, right? They live with my family. Because my mom was a tremendous caretaker.
Huh.
Yeah. So we always are the one that go back and clear their room.
I think it's also very important for people to figure out what is an outlet of expression for them during grieving. Because I like, be it in written form or maybe it's for some people it's music, for some people it's I don't know what lah. But I do think that there is a need for them to express their thoughts and feelings about the whoever has passed. It really helps with the grieving process, I feel.
Okay, I have a weird confession, which is a weird detour also. In that whenever things happen, right, y'all keep talking about, you know, we need time to process. Like in the earlier episode, you talk about you need up to 24 hours to process an argument, for example, or like process the funeral to grieve with the body.
Mm.
I don't know what y'all are talking about.
You've never had to.
Because you process on the spot.
It's that, or it's going to hit me everything at once.
Everything everywhere.
Yeah, you know, like, to me, like, for example, like, the most personally traumatizing things that I needed to process was, like, getting over a breakup, for example, or a death of my grandmother, which I was close to. Because for most of my relatives, I really never spent much time with them, right? But to me, it's really sad, yeah. Distract myself, I don't be sad. Like, because sad is non-productive to me. So like, I would channel to productivity. Like when I get over trying to get over my first breakup, I would go to the gym, then I would go and learn how to play guitar. You know, cause like sit down there and sad, and you'll still be sad tomorrow, man, if you don't do anything today. Like, you'll be less sad, but 1% less sad. But if you learn guitar, you might be marginally less sad tomorrow, you know?
I think you are the last generation of stoic men.
Stoic men.
You know, like the generation that built this nation.
Of real men.
Yeah. Hey, no, mental. Okay,
mental okay. You are the last manly men on this Singapore.
No, but I feel like it's the processing, right? Is trying to understand what and fully feel what the sadness is. Because sadness is too broad of a word to really articulate like how you actually feel. And on top of that also, it's why you feel that way. So like for example, if your breakout example, it's what are you really sad about? Are you sad because you still want this person? Are you sad because the relationship showed you why you are wrong for this person or what you need to do, why you are not a good partner or is it just like certain regrets that you did or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like it could, or even like loss, like what we're talking about.
No, so once I identify this, or does loneliness. It mean that I have processed it?
I think that's part of it.
Then what is the other? Like after I identify already and then?
Being at peace at what happened.
It always depends because at the end of the day,
that's me.
An like just like that. An emotional response is something that can be quite irrational. So then the confusion comes because you're like, why am I actually feeling this way? So then that expounds the sadness or disappointment or whatever. But being able to understand why am I feeling this way just allows you to then have the option. Okay, maybe it's because I realize that I'm wrong for this person. Mm-hmm. Or maybe like then if you know they're wrong for this person, then it helps you create actionable that maybe I need to identify what's a right person for me. Mm-hmm. Like there's actionables that come, but it really depends on what that understanding. It doesn't have to be right.
So my question is, do you actually like, for example, dedicate time, sit down there to process things?
Yes.
It looks different for different people.
Yeah.
Sometimes you could be distracting yourself.
I do things that are considered processing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Definitely.
I don't sit down there and process things.
Like what you said just now about having the funeral planning done by your loved ones instead, right? Because it helps them process.
Yeah.
Distracts them. But I think in some ways, it helps them to process. I feel like I belong to that group of people. I need to do things. Because when, let's for example, grief, right? I don't react immediately. I don't know how to, I haven't processed grief. So doing things at the end, maybe 2 months down, right? Then I start to think, oh, I miss this person.
Yeah.
Then that's where I will let myself feel the emotions and not be reactive at the start.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's kind of similar in that I don't sit down there and try and process power through.
Mm.
It was just, okay, like let's say in losing a loved one, like let's say my grandmother, right? So when she left, sad lah, cry, right?
Mm-hmm.
She took care of me and all that stuff and now she's no longer here. Honestly, it's also because there were a lot of adults around me crying so I can feel the sadness in the air. So it makes me want to cry also.
Mm.
So why am I sad? To me, there's no question of sad is so broad-based. Which sad am I? You know, like to me, that's not a question I ask. To me, I have lost a loved one. It's natural to be sad. I'm feeling sad. Sad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then what to do now? You know, I don't begin processing. Until I just go and check my family, see whether they're okay, we grab our shit. What do we need to go? We need to go back to the wake and clean up the wake. Let's go and clean up the wake.
No, so I think that's what your processing looks like though. That like making sure that the family is taken care of. Like that's how you deal with the loss of this person. Ma.
No, I think to answer her original question, which is that what is the point of this, right? You process to identify. Once you identify already, then this is the first few steps, right? That leads you to finding closure towards this.
Mm-hmm.
Which but then, why do you need closure from?
Because I think it frees you from being triggered later on.
Mm. Yes.
And it will keep re-triggering you because it's unresolved.
It creates blockages.
Mm-hmm. But let's say you grieve the death of a loved one.
No, so that it could...
Or let's say a breakup.
As it could affect the way that you handle your relationships in the future. So it could be that, oh no, like maybe my best friend passed away, right? Then I think that like, because I've invested so much of my time and honor into this person, so that when they leave, right, I'm so sad I cannot do anything, I'm crippled. So in future, then I'm subconsciously like holding myself back from making such deep connections with people because I don't want to feel that same sense of loss.
I'm curious to know whether it's a matter of him not experiencing certain things.
That's what I want to know.
From feeling the nuance of it all. Because like prior to me experiencing depression, I said this before, right? When my friends talk about depression, I said, get over it lah. But then once I got depressed myself, then I was like, what? Whoa. Why is all this? the depression, this tip iceberg, you know?
It's like seeing a new color.
Yeah, goddamn.
Thank you very much for watching today's episode. I hope it has changed your view on talking about death, hopefully, maybe a bit. See you in the next one. Like, share, and subscribe. What he's talking about, like, what if life happened backwards? So you kind of, you start off dead, right? After you wake up in an old people's home and you feel So you start feeling better every day. You get kicked out for being too healthy. You go collect your pension and then you start work. You get a gold watch and you get a retirement party on your first day. You work for 40 years until you're young enough to enjoy your retirement. You party, drink alcohol and are generally promiscuous. Then you are ready for high school. Then you go to primary school, then you become a kid, then you play. You have no responsibilities and you become a baby until you are born. So your last 9 months are floating around in a luxurious spa-like condition of central heating and room service on tap. And then voila, you finish off as an orgasm.
Thank you for that. That was great.
It's so interesting. Like,
I really enjoyed it. Yeah. What a ride there.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.